You're listening to Catch the Tariffs, the coolest seafood tariff podcast out there from the team at Undercurrent News, your trusted source for seafood prices, news, and data. I'm Amanda Buckle.
And I'm Lauren Castiglione. And did you just name our show Catch the Tariffs?
Well, if we're not going to stop talking about them.
I mean, it's pretty impossible to stop talking about them. So, all right, carry on.
So the UN Trade and Development Agency just released a new global trade update on policy insights for the ocean economy. The 26-page report, which we'll link back to in our show notes, highlights the impact of tariffs on fisheries.
One big takeaway is that U.S. prices on fish products are likely to rise as a result of the tariffs due to limited capacity to scale up local production. The report states that demand for fisheries imports may fall, leading to increased prices for local fish products. And of course, they note that you have to factor in the global wild fish stocks are already overfished, and aquaculture production requires time to scale up. The report also noted that the U.S. recent rollback of certain regulations on fishing and conservation could further pressure fish stocks in the medium and long term.
The thing that really stuck out to me is that the report said that the ocean economy had been showing clear signs of post-COVID-19 pandemic recovery. And then bam, Liberation Day comes and just like, you know, blows that all out. You know, not completely. The report says that the ocean goods and services trade is expected to remain stable into 2025. But there's still a lot of, our drinking word here, uncertainties linked to the trade tensions. And then, yes. Of course, yep, we're never going to get rid of those uncertainties. But then, of course, they also mentioned maritime disruptions that persist.
Can't forget about those global shipping route disruptions.
Nope, can't forget about those. The report says regional tensions and climate-related droughts will continue to cause delays and longer shipping distances, ultimately increasing volatility in maritime transport.
So the report said to also look for rising costs there.
Fun stuff, honestly.
Yeah. We always bring the positive news.
The report, no, it's definitely worth a deeper dive if you have time for the full 26 pages.
Or the perfect beach read.
Speaking of which, did I tell you that I found a romance novel where one of the characters is a king crab fisherman in Washington?
Go on.
Email me to join my super secret summer seafood romance book club, or SSSRBC for short.
It's so hard. Steer the ship back to course.
Yes, please. We have real things to talk about.
So, and believe it or not, we're not done talking about tariffs.
Of course not. This is Catch the Tariffs. So the U.S. Trade Representative has extended tariff exclusions on a number of Chinese imports under Section 301, including processed haddock and flatfish, through August 31st. The announcement came in just under the wire. Without it, tariffs on these products would have jumped to 55% on June 1st. And that extra 25% would have stacked on top of the current 30% rate already in place. So this move gives importers some much needed breathing room.
And China's role here is massive. The country not only processes a significant share of haddock and flatfish consumed in the U.S., but it also sources a lot of that raw material from Russia, Norway, and Alaska. Even with the exemption in place, there's still a 30% duty due to other tariffs, but that decision avoids a major cost spike for now. The extension brought a collective sigh of relief across the industry. One U.S. importer told Undercurrent News, "I no longer expect a collapse in the haddock raw material. So buyers who were holding off are stepping back in, and it's showing up in the data. Raw material prices for Russian and Norwegian H&G haddock held steady in week 23 at $5,250 and $5,750 per metric ton. That's CIF China, respectively."
So for Chinese plants, it also means they have a bit more runway to process and ship to the U.S. East Coast, still the biggest consumption hub for haddock. But some market participants are already calling for a longer extension, pointing to long lead times and the potential for renewed price turbulence once the exemption expires.
Right. 90 days, when you think about it, is not that long, but you do get a little breath of fresh air in there. So meanwhile, Chinese IQF haddock fillets held steady at $5.73 per pound in the U.S. wholesale market for this week. And while prices didn't budge, the exemption offers critical short-term relief, especially heading into the summer food service season. So globally, processors continue turning to haddock to offset cod shortages, and traders say reliance on haddock will likely increase in the months ahead.
Speaking of cod, let's shift to the other side of the whitefish ledger. EU sanctions on Russian fishing giants Noribo and Murmin which together control over 50% of Russia's cod quota, have triggered a surge in cod pricing. Norwegian H&G cod hit a record $8,050 per metric ton CIF China last week. Russian cod remains around $7,000, but that gap could close fast if restrictions tighten further.
And it's not just a raw material issue. There's a growing gray area around whether EU buyers can legally import fillets reprocessed in Asia using Nerebo or Merman sourced cod. Some say the fish will still find its way into Europe, but others are far more cautious. Either way, the sanctions are fueling major market uncertainty. Take a drink.
So pollock's also heating up. Russian H&G pollock prices jumped nearly 6% this week as the West Bering Sea season kicked off. Sellers are now pushing for an additional $50 to $100 per ton increase. And with inventories still relatively lean, it's another whitefish market feeling the squeeze.
And back to the U.S., yellowfin sole is holding steady too this week. Week 23 pricing ranged from $3.30 a pound for smaller 3 to 4 ounce size fillets, up to $3.80 per pound for 6 to 8 ounce size products. But just like with haddock, the market sentiment is cautious. If the Section 301 exemption expires at the end of August, that could push prices higher as buyers scramble to book product ahead of that deadline.
So the big takeaway, the Section 301 extension gave haddock and sole a short-term lifeline in the U.S., but between sanctions, tariff threats, and tightening global supply, the broader whitefish market is still navigating a minefield, so we'll be watching it closely.
And this is where some of Undercurrent's data really shines. Check our show notes for more. The U.S. imports of frozen haddock and fillets have declined each year since peaking in 2022. Even so, China continues to hold a dominant position, supplying around 50% of the market. The UCN Global Trade Portal helps you track these trade flows by species, product form, country, and more. Whether you're watching tariffs or shifting sourcing strategies, it's a powerful tool to help you stay ahead.
We've got to move on from tariffs, but before we do, I just want to give a quick mention to a really interesting story from UCN's Jacob Resnick this week on how the White House's trade war with Beijing punishes West Coast geoey duck producers. So link to that story in the show notes. In other news, Undercurrent's very own Lisa Meyer was reporting from the BC Salmon Farmers Association's annual general meeting this week, which obviously the focus was on the 2029 net pen ban in British Columbia's coastal waters. So Lisa shares some really interesting insights on what's going on in BC, because you can't forget that Canada's also under new federal leadership. So links to those stories also in the show notes. All right, now on to our next guest, the one and only Jason Huffman, who got sucked into a more than 2 hour hearing by the U.S. House of Representatives Natural Resources Committee's Oceans Panel on Wednesday. What was supposed to be a hearing with an intended focus on President Trump's executive order for restoring American seafood competitiveness ultimately was eaten up by a different topic, the damage the industry is facing as a result of the administration gutting the staff at NOAA. Jason, tell us, did anyone flip a table or were there folding chairs, use of props to bang over someone's head? What was going on during that hearing?
Oh, yeah, I wish that happened. You're probably thinking of a Bobby Knight moment. You know, the late Indiana University basketball coach who was famous for throwing chairs in gymnasium. It was indeed colorful, but no furniture left the floor that I saw. Still, it was high drama and not at all boring. So the Republicans now control both chambers of Congress. They get to dictate the subjects of all the hearings that get called on Capitol Hill. And they called a hearing on Wednesday, June 4th, in the House Natural Resources Committee's Oceans Panel, as you noted, to discuss ideas for following up on the executive order that President Trump issued back on April 17th for the, quote, restoring American seafood competitiveness. It was kind of a setup for the seafood industry. It was kind of a pro-Trump pep rally, and there were some elements of that to it. For example, Dustin Delano, chief operating officer at the New England Fishermen's Stewardship Association, he gave a long list of changes the U.S. lobster industry would like to see in order to reverse some stifling regulations, especially a few that he said gave advantages to Canadian lobster harvesters. And I'll be covering that in a story that comes out on Friday as well. So look for that. But Delano was one of five witnesses called to testify. There was also a Martha Gaius from the Southeast Fishery Policy Director at American Sport Fishing Association, Tallahassee, Florida. She's pushing for recreational harvesters to have more access to red snapper in the Gulf of Mexico. They had Rick Bellavance, chairman of the New England Regional Fishery Management Council. He was on the panel along with Larson Hunter, chairman of the Board of Directors of the Coastal Villages Region Fund in Scammon Bay, Alaska. And the idea was to get those guys to talk about what the industry could use, what they could get from the Trump administration. And the setup was that this event shows that Congress is behind this executive order. We'll back it up. But then, like almost right out of the gate, what do you say? Snap, snap.
Snip, snap, snip, snap.
Yeah, almost right out of the gate, the Democrats on the subcommittee seized on the opportunity to take over this giant birthday party and instead focus the event on the cuts made by DOGE to NOAA, as well as the future cuts to be made to NOAA under the president's proposed big, beautiful budget bill, and just a whole lot of other complaints that they brought up. The champions of this attack were California Democrat Jared Huffman, who is the ranking member of the House Natural Resources Committee. He's not my cousin, I swear. And Representative Seth Magaziner, a Rhode Island Democrat, but others took turns as well. Magaziner noted how Elon Musk, who he said, quote, doesn't know anything about the fishing industry.
Make no mistake, we are in a moment of crisis right now when it comes to fisheries management because of the Trump administration's gutting of NOAA over the last 4 months. And to be clear, Elon Musk doesn't know anything about the fishing industry. The 20-year-olds that he hired to go through and fire thousands of federal workers don't come from a fishing industry background. They had no idea what they're doing. And they fired 2,000 out of the 12,000 employees at NOAA, nearly 20% of the staff gutted.
Huffman, again, not me, not my cousin, declared the president's executive order and the hearing to be examples of gaslighting the industry while doing more harm than good. And that was just kind of like that setup was amazing. And then the most interesting witness was Jamie O'Connor, the deputy executive director of the Alaska Marine Conservation Council, herself a generational salmon farmer. She described some of the consequences of the cuts, which she said hit 30% of the National Marine Fisheries Service staff in Alaska, causing canceled stock surveys, fishing season delays, early closures in the Gulf of Alaska. Also, cuts to the National Weather Service, which operates inside NOAA, and that presents a new element of danger to harvesters, she warned. She described 20-foot skiffs finding themselves in the middle of 10-foot seas. And that sounds harrowing, right? All the comments and testimony may not have been a thrown chair, but they were pretty attention-grabbing.
So-called 20-year-olds that are cutting these things, you don't realize what goes into it, and especially the safety aspect of it. That I didn't realize that there was these safety courses that were being offered that these fishermen have to have, and that these were being cut in the process as well. So it is really eye-opening.
Yeah, all of the fisheries depend on regulatory action. And if you reduce the staff, of course, those things don't get done.
Thanks, Jason. Now on to some market updates this week. I'll give you a little update on scallops. So the US domestic scallop market continued to soften in week 23, with prices declining further amid record high landings in the Channel area. Catch volumes surpassed 1.1 million pounds, accounting for 93% of the total weekly landings and marking the highest weekly tally of the 2025-2026 season to date. Harvesters are continuing to report catch rates near 4,000 pounds a day, and landings may exceed expectations by 4 million pounds or more if the productivity holds. So, the beginning of the season, we were expecting around 18 million pounds for this season. So, it was very doom and gloom. We had already seen back-to-back quota decreases year over year. And so, this is such a sigh of relief for the scallopers out there.
And we've got our weekly regular on with us, price analyst Gary Morrison. Gary, what do you have got for us this week?
Certainly heading into summer now, so people are looking at, the specific items that they're looking to eat, right? And I think top of mind for many in the country are lobster rolls. So we were looking at lobster meat and tails this week, and we did see some lower prices again. But I think as the week progressed, things started to stabilize. These lower price actions over the last 4 to 5 weeks has started to form a bottom. I think the industry has navigated the tariffs a lot better than expected. And in addition, cold weather at the start of the Canadian lobster season has hampered landings. So the glut of supply that most people would have thought to come online at this time is not materializing in the way that they thought it would. So prices, after some discounts again this week, look to be stabilizing. And then, both buyers and sellers are going to, look to see if there's anything that's going to, certainly help the market. I think buyers were working through their inventory to see clearer indication that the market has bottomed out. And a lot of people have told me that this might be the time. So, and anticipated demand for lobster meat is expected to be good moving forward. So that should also help pricing scenarios in the coming weeks as well. So, lobster rolls, unfortunately, are going to remain expensive for you out there.
Boo.
I know. But when it comes to lobster, I think people are showing a willingness to pay the prices because they are so good, right?
It's true. That is very true, Gary.
And then some of the other markets, shrimp kind of a sideways market this week. Most prices generally steady. I think we've been seeing that over the last couple of weeks after a significant rise in prices after April 2nd, the initial Liberation Day tariffs. Buyers and sellers certainly want to see how things play out with further negotiations as we're awaiting trade deals with a variety of countries. But with some of the tariffs paused, the expectation is that imports over the next couple of months, and we will get April imports here in the next few days, are going to be pretty hefty. So I think that's weighing on buyers' mind. They don't want to make a decision now when there's really no supply risk in the coming months. So really a sideways trade in shrimp, and the same thing in crab. So not much to report there. I know in the last pod we talked snow crab a little bit in greater detail. So really lobster's the story this week, and then we'll continue to see what happens in coming weeks.
We're also excited to welcome Ben Fisher to the podcast and the Undercurrent News team. Ben joins us as a senior price reporter, bringing experience from Fast Markets and Seafood Source, and he's already making an impact here. Ben is leading our new U.S. wholesale price assessments for wild salmon, live lobster, Mediterranean sea bass, and sea bream, and Chilean sea bass, aka toothfish, will be coming next week.
So, on the live lobster market, two of Canada's historically most productive lobster fishing areas closed over the weekend. That's LFA or Lobster Fishing Areas 33 and 34 on the southern coast of Nova Scotia. Those are winter fisheries. Their season is over, and now Maine lobstermen are looking to make up that reduction in supply. Still, though, the water in that part of the world is a bit cold, unseasonably cold. But the weather is improving, and one lobsterman source of mine said that his catch has picked up in recent weeks. He said, though, that that was something of an anomaly compared to other boats that he'd talked to. But a dealer that I spoke with said that he'd seen Maine live lobster supply increase by some 50 to 75% last week. So the live lobster market supply side of things is a bit all over the place. It also seems like the friction in U.S. trade with China caused by the tariffs has not gone away entirely because of the partial tariff rollback. Last year, the U.S. sent about $160 million worth of live lobster to China. And now, although Beijing's retaliatory tariffs on the U.S. have been reduced, it appears that live lobster exports to China have still slowed significantly. And in fact, that's probably one of the reasons why the larger size lobster and smaller size lobster are going in the different directions price-wise. This week, our price assessment reflected that smaller sized lobster are coming up a bit in price, while larger sizes are declining in price. Big lobsters have often been shipped to China and eaten there for special occasions, at banquets, things like that. And now they are remaining in the American market, and they are a bit harder to move, and resultedly, they are driving the prices a bit lower. The prices that we reflected this week for live lobster of larger sizes were the lowest they've been since we began this live lobster price assessment. For wild salmon, that season is starting up as well. The Copper River opener in Alaska marks the beginning of that state's wild salmon season. Frozen inventories from last year are pretty much completely depleted. And while we're not tracking Copper River prices specifically, we have troll king salmon pricing available for other origins. And those troll kings were selling for a very wide spread back in April when the season began in the Pacific Northwest and a bit into May, actually. But now they seem to have settled around the $13, $14 per pound area. And as more fishing areas open up in Alaska this season, we're going to have additional wholesale prices for all five species of wild salmon. I'm hearing that demand for Copper River fish has not been great, and that seems to be the case as well for troll kings, but it's still early. I'm hearing that the fish are big and fat, and there is still quite a lot of optimism for this wild salmon season.
Thanks, Ben. Now, before we go, I just wanted to talk about one more headline I found interesting this week. Wildtype, a San Francisco, California-based company that grows seafood from cells, is debuting its products at a restaurant in Portland, Oregon this month after securing approval from the U.S. FDA. So Wildtype is the fourth cultivated protein producer to complete a U.S. pre-market scientific and safety consultation and the third to have a full approval to sell. They were founded in 2016 by a cardiologist and a former diplomat and have received backing over the years from Cargill and the love of my teen heartthrob days, Leonardo DiCaprio, who, as we all know, can be very outspoken about seafood, specifically open-net Penn salmon farms. So really interesting, to follow Wildtype's moves, and the full story on Wildtype can be found in the show notes.
And that does it for us this week. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you back here next week with some more tariff news, probably.
Catch the tariffs.
Bye-bye.